This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
We focus on the part of the internet that most people don't know about. It's called the dark web.
Undercover in the furthest corners of the dark web, US special agents are on a mission to locate and rescue children from abuse.
Move in now.
Police!
From the BBC World Service, World of Secrets, the darkest web follows their shocking investigations. Listen on bbc.com or wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
You're about to listen to a brand new series of Lady Swindlers with Lucy Worsley. New episodes will be released weekly wherever you get your podcasts, but if you're in the UK, you can listen to the latest episodes a week early, first on BBC Sounds.
Hello, and welcome to Lady Swindlers with me, Lucy Worsley. Have you ever had an uncanny feeling that there might be someone else in the room? A spirit, for example? Are you a believer?
Is this a spirit? Is this an injured spirit? Were you injured in this house?
Millions of spirits are now walking this world unseen.
Now do this just as I do. Count one, two, three, four.
Spiritualism is a humbug from beginning to end. It is the greatest humbug of the century.
It must be a hoax. Or is it? This is Lady Swindlers, where true crime meets history with a twist. Join me and my all-female team of detectives to meet women who stepped outside their ordinary lives to do extraordinary things. What do their lives and crimes tell us about women in the past? And how different is it for women today? I now invite you, if you dare, to link hands with me and the acclaimed mediums, Maggie Kate and Leah Fox. We're in a genteel drawing room in 1850s New York. A séance is underway. The curtains are drawn. The gas lamps flicker. Maybe we'll see the table levitating, or hear it being wrapped by unseen fingers. Perhaps a musical instrument will play all by itself. The spiritualist movement is taking the country by storm. The craze for spiritualism crosses class divides and claims followers including First Lady Mary Lincoln, Arthur Conan Doyle, and even Queen Victoria. But from the very beginning, the sisters are dogged by claims of fraud. The very first journalist to report on these strange goings-on in 1848 said that it seems to be beyond the power of human ingenuity to solve the thrilling mystery. Well, here at Lady Swindlers, we've got ingenuity aplenty. And here to help me today is our guest detective, Dr. Tamer Bryant. Dr. Tamer is a past president of the American Psychological Association. She's a professor of psychology at Pepperdine University, and one of her specialisms is the intersection of spirituality and psychology. Hello, Dr. Tamer.
Hello, so good to be with you.
Could you tell me a bit about your lifelong interest in spirituality?
I grew up as the daughter of a pastor in Baltimore, Maryland. So within our community, people were more likely to call their pastor for support than to reach out to a therapist or a psychologist. And so I had an interest in helping people through the various challenges of life and also understanding the human mind. So once I heard about the field of psychology, it felt like a natural progression from what I observed growing up.
We can't wait to hear your analysis of the Fox sisters and the extraordinary things that will occur. But first, let's find out a little more about spiritualism itself. And to do this, I am delighted to be joined by Barbara Weisberg from New York. She's the author of Strong Passions, A Scandalous Divorce in Old New York, and Talking to the Dead, a study of Kate and Maggie Fox and the rise of spiritualism. Welcome, Barbara.
Thank you, Lucy. I'm just delighted to be here.
Spiritualists believe that the spirits of the dead can communicate with the living, usually through a medium. But what happens at a seance? And what do Kate and Maggie actually do as mediums?
A seance often began with a group of people sitting around a table and holding hands. And they would listen for manifestations. And the spirits manifested their presence by raps or knocks or noises. Now, if spiritualism begins with raps and knocks, it very quickly moves on to quite wilder manifestations, where first you have the table where people are gathered beginning to levitate, and then you might have another table in the room ricocheting from wall to wall. And it was said that the medium Kate Fox could be talking as herself to someone at the seance, writing automatically from a spirit, and at the same time summoning an apparition who would appear. So there was a lot that could go on at a seance.
Wow, she was a real multitasker. Barbara, the Fox sisters are the stars of this new spiritualist movement. How famous do you reckon that they really were?
Oh, they became, within just a few years, world famous. Newspapers carry stories about them from one end of the continent to the other. Kate winds up going to England and eventually to Russia, where she is said by some to perform even for the Tsar.
I'm intrigued to hear what Tamer has to say about this. But first, to truly understand the astonishing celebrity of these sisters, we need to go back to where it all began, with their humble beginnings in New York State. In 1847, the Fox family moved to the little country town of Hydesville. Maggie is 14 and Kate is 12. Leah, about 20 years older, is working in the city of Rochester, 30 miles away. It's in the Fox house that some very strange things start to happen. Now we're heading to snowy Hydesville itself to meet Tracy Murphy. She's an expert in the Fox sisters and caretaker for the Fox sisters' house. She's also the director of Historic Palmyra, a collection of five museums close by.
So this property has been here since 1814, when the Fox family moved here in December of 1847. They would have seen very much what we're looking at now. Snow, cold, rural. One of the interesting stories I find interesting anyway, is that as we're walking through the doorway, this is always in my mind, because Mrs. Fox, when she first stepped through the door of the Fox cottage, she looked around and said, "Oh, this place is haunted." And those were her first words, which, you know, back then you did not say things like that, because it was very much, you know, a black and white society, and you were either on the side of good or you were on the side of not good. So for her to say that, it must have made quite the impression on her. So Maggie and Kate, living here, they would have had chores like anybody else, pulling some water from the well or helping their mother get some food out of the cellar. Life was boring. Being December, January, February until March, we get a lot of snow, and I can't imagine that they are able to get out of the house very much.
It's here in the quiet hamlet of Hydesville on a cold night in March 1848 that the family begin to encounter some very bizarre phenomena. According to Margaret Fox, that's Kate and Maggie's mother.
The first night that we heard the rapping, we all got up and lit a candle and searched all over the house. The noise continued while we were hunting and was heard near the same place all the time.
But it's brave young Maggie, aged only 14, who attempts to communicate with whatever it is that's making the noise.
"Now do this just as I do. Count one, two, three, four.
That's extraordinary. Now, to help us understand what might be going on here, we are joined by our guest detective, Dr. Tamer Bryant. Now, Tamer, we've got a mother and young daughters moving into a new home and 4 months later hearing bangs in the night. What might be going on here?
This is such an interesting story and experience that you have been sharing. The first thing is that there could actually be physical stimulus in the house, critters, creatures that are in the walls. And so they may actually be hearing sounds. But one of the things we consider in psychology is, what is the story we tell ourselves? So we could all hear something and come to very different conclusions about what the source of the sound is. The mother is involved, so it could be a shared storytelling that grows over time. Or we also recognize there could be some truth to people's experience. People who come in, for example, to therapy have various spiritual and religious and faith traditions. So if a client said, "I felt the Holy Spirit," or "I recognize the presence of God," or "I felt the presence of an ancestor who is no longer alive," we would not start from a place of disbelief, but sitting with them to figure out the meaning of that for them.
Interesting. From what we've heard so far, what's your hunch, truth or hoax? Which way are you leaning?
I am holding the reality of both possibilities.
I think that that is the right thing to do at this particular point. I'm with you there. Let's return to Tracy Murphy in Hinesville to see what happens next.
The cottage would have been not very well insulated, definitely. All wood. There's windows, two windows in the front of the house, and then the door in the middle. Going up the stairs, there would have been one big bedroom upstairs, and that's where the girls would have been. And obviously, they're sleeping in the same bed. That's just how things were done back then. But when the noises started, they ended up downstairs on the floor of their parents' bedroom. Mrs. Fox can't believe this is happening. She's able to make the rapping noises respond to her. And she started asking questions like, "How many children do I have?" Getting the correct response. "Are you living? Are you a living person that makes these noises?" And no response. "Are you a spirit?" And getting a response, until she reached the point where her last question to the spirit was, "If I get the neighbors and bring them in, will you continue rapping?" And she got a yes. So she sends out her husband, who is utterly terrified. I can imagine him running around clutching his Bible, you know, just, "Oh no, oh no, what is happening?" And Mrs. Fox sends him to go get the soundest neighbors, soundest in mind. They say within a 24-hour period, there were 500 people in the house.
Some declare that this is trickery, others superstition, but either way, it creates a furore. The girls begin to hold spirit circles to communicate with the departed. They make their first public appearance in the Corinthian Hall in Rochester in November 1849. And although there are many skeptics, it's from this moment that their fame accelerates. They gain millions of followers over the following decades. They travel to cities across the United States and later to Europe, with guests paying money to attend seances led by Kate or Maggie Fox. The older sister, Leah, manages the tight and lucrative schedule of the young girls. Spiritualism is on the ascendant. I'm with our guest detective, Dr. Tamer. How do you explain this? We've got a fascination that ripples through society, every day growing, and it seems it's sort of acquiring a momentum of its own.
Yes, we often have a desire for access to knowledge, answers, wisdom that is beyond us. So if we can get a cheat code or get some answers that would give us guidance, often people are hungry and longing for that. And then I want to also name in contemporary times and historically, the voices of women and children have been dishonored or disregarded or marginalized. And so to have at the center of this story, people who would be marginalized both by gender and by age is remarkable.
We focus on the part of the internet that most people don't know about. It's called the dark web.
Undercover in the furthest corners of the dark web. U.S. special agents are on a mission to locate and rescue children from abuse.
Move in now.
Police!
From the BBC World Service, World of Secrets, The Darkest Web follows their shocking investigations. Listen on bbc.com or wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Interesting. Let's find out what happens next. It isn't just their mysterious talents that explains the sisters' rise to fame. They are living in a 19th century society that's open to experiencing wonders. The telegraph, for example, is an astonishing innovation of the 1800s. Messages can now be turned into electrical impulses that travel instantaneously through wires. And if messages can be transmitted so easily in this world, is it such a great leap to think that it might be possible to hear messages from other worlds? To explore this changing society, I'm joined by author Barbara Weisberg. Spiritualism is flourishing in a time of great change in America, Barbara. What else creates such a fertile ground for the movement?
It's a thrilling time. It's a society that's really questioning its own fundamental values. It's a time when abolition is flourishing and women's rights are becoming of tremendous interest. And you have all sorts of utopian communities beginning to flourish, particularly in Western New York, which is where you have the Fox sisters emerging.
What do we know about Kate and Maggie at this time of their ascendancy? Do they enjoy it? Do they like the limelight?
I think you can certainly say that it was thrilling and exciting for them. They're known to be mischievous, they're known to be smart, and what we can probably assume about them is that they were interested not just in other worlds as in spirit worlds, but in a world that offers more than what the times offered women of their class in that day. Women weren't allowed to speak in public. Women couldn't go to college. Women couldn't control their own finances. In many ways, they couldn't control their own bodies. And here these young country girls are out in public, speaking before audiences in New York City and other places and making money and meeting the great and famous. This is not what women of their day were generally doing.
They sound to me kind of like child movie stars. They're performing in public, and everybody knows that child stars get screwed up. I'm worried for these girls. Are you?
Absolutely, and well, you should be, Lucy. Among other things, the girls are celebrated with parties and champagne, and they come from a family where the father is an alcoholic. You begin very quickly to see that the girls are relying a little too much on alcohol, and that's something that they go on to struggle with for most of their lives.
Okay, this is getting even more intriguing. The sisters' influence is growing. They become global celebrities, but battles still rage over their authenticity. Undaunted, they submit themselves to tests to prove that they're for real. In 1857, the Boston Courier offers $500 to any medium who can demonstrate paranormal abilities to a panel of professors. but the professors declare that the girl's skills are a ridiculous fraud. This isn't the final verdict, though. Almost 10 years later, a famed London psychic, investigator and physicist, William Crookes, examines Kate Fox, and he's completely convinced by the knocks and the raps.
In the case of Miss Fox, it seems only necessary for her to place her hand on any substance for loud thuds to be heard in it, like a triple pulsation, sometimes loud enough to be heard several rooms off. I have had these sounds when the medium's hands and feet were held, when she was standing on a chair, when she was suspended in a swing from the ceiling, when she was enclosed in a wire cage, and when she had fallen fainting on a sofa.
At the end of multiple tests, he declares,
I have tested them in every way that I could devise until there has been no escape from the conviction that they were true objective occurrences.
Now then, you must be thinking, get to it, Lucy. Are the Fox sisters lady swindlers or not? Well, something extraordinary is about to happen. On October the 21st, 1888, aged 54, Maggie Fox steps onto the stage at the New York Academy of Music and declares,
I am here tonight as one of the founders of spiritualism to denounce it as an absolute falsehood from beginning to end, as the flimsiest of superstitions, the most wicked blasphemy known to the world.
No, she says it's not true. Maggie goes on to remove her shoe and put her foot on a table, and the hushed hall watches in astonishment as she now makes three short raps by contorting her foot. The very sounds that have bewildered people for decades. Doctors confirm that Maggie produces the sounds out of the joints of her toe. Maggie offers her defense.
There are probably many here who will scorn me for the deception I have practiced. Yet did they know the true history of my unhappy past, the living agony and shame that it has been to me, they would pity, not reproach. The imposition which I have so long maintained began in my early childhood when, with character and mind still unformed, I was unable to distinguish between right and wrong.
The newspapers now whip themselves into a frenzy at this astonishing turn of events.
The Fox sisters sound the death knell of the medium.
It's all a fraud, a deception, and a lie.
If spirit rappings find any credence hereafter, it would seem a wise precaution on the part of the authorities to begin the enlargement of the state's insane asylums.
Tamer, what do you make of all of that, then?
I think it is powerful that at an older age, she was willing to not only speak a truth to herself, but to confess it out loud. And so it is a great example, I think, a model of when we grow or learn or heal or evolve, what does accountability look like and how we can try to make corrective action when we feel we have done harm or misled people. And I think it was so important to learn about alcoholism and addiction being present in the family. Those who have been raised by persons struggling with addiction often spend their lives people-pleasing or catering to others in order to try to remain safe because you're dealing with someone who can be volatile or who can be out of control. And so they would have grown up learning how to kind of walk around their father. And so then what are people coming to them for them to anticipate their needs and to meet those needs? So I can definitely see with more understanding of their background, how they could have landed in the situation they were in.
To examine the historical twists and turns, I'm joined by Barbara Weisberg. Barbara, is there anything about their life events which forces this confession now?
Maggie is really mad at her fellow spiritualists. Maggie has had a scandalous affair. Maggie has had trouble with alcoholism. She's no longer the most celebrated medium, and she feels that she has lost a lot of her cachet with her fellow spiritualists. They haven't stood by her. She's having trouble getting audiences and clients. And she's penniless and she needs money. And she goes on stage and she basically blows the whistle. And Maggie is not only getting a little vengeance here, but she's also hoping that she'll make money again. Now, a year later, Maggie recants her confession. And she turns around and says, "I'm sorry. I still hear the spirits. They are with me day and night."
So she recants and then withdraws the recantation. You couldn't make this up.
I know. It's wonderful. I agree.
Barbara, this series is called Lady Swindlers. The implication is that everybody who's being featured is a swindler, is a fraudster. What do you think? Do the sisters have a place here, or does that do them a disservice?
You have mixed motives with the Fox sisters. They get involved in telling people that the spirits are real and that they communicate with them. They begin to get audiences. They begin to get money. They begin to get plied with champagne. And they're in a situation where they have to produce to keep going. And in order to do that, I have no doubt myself, others would disagree, that there were times and circumstances when they were doing magic tricks of some sort or working with accomplices. I don't think that that necessarily says in any way that there weren't other times that they didn't believe what they were doing or that they may have been doing something that none of us fully understand. If a medium commits fraud sometimes, does it mean that that medium always commits fraud? If some mediums are fakes, does it mean that all mediums are fakes? No.
For the last word, let's return to Dr. Tamer Bryant. Tamer, their skills offered them an extraordinary life, but in the end, was it worth it?
I think it did provide a pathway for them to have what some would call an extraordinary life. Therapeutically or psychologically, I would want them or someone in their position to be able to have an experience where they did not have to rely on their faith or their gifts to make a living, to be able to develop whatever that is going to be for them from an authentic and genuine place. And also for them and those living during that time to have access to ways of coping and healing beyond alcohol or beyond manipulation so that they and we can actually live well.
Well, we set out on a thrilling quest to solve a mystery. And I think we certainly have come across an explanation in Maggie's foot for the eerie knocks. But were the Fox sisters just con women? I think not. I can imagine that what started out as a prank spiraled and they ended up believing in it. I suspect for much of their lives, the sisters did genuinely think they were in touch with the dead and did genuinely believe that they were helping their clients, relieving people's pain and their grief. And the sad fact that both Maggie and Kate die penniless in their 50s suggests that it wasn't all for the money. Despite that 1888 confession, the spiritualist movement didn't die. In fact, the National Spiritualist Association of Churches still has many followers today. The spirits weren't so easily silenced after all. A big thank you to Tamer Bryant, Tracy Murphy, and Barbara Weisberg. Join me next time when I'm on the trail of an international female art thief living in London in the 1850s. Lady Swindlers with Lucy Worsley is produced by Emily Hughes, and the readers are Jonathan Keeble, Claire Corbett, and Alex Phelps. The historical consultant is Rosalind Crone, and the commissioning editor for BBC Radio 4 is Rhiann Roberts. The executive producer is Kirsty Hunter. It's a Story Hunter production for BBC Radio 4. And you can catch up with Lady Swindlers weekly on BBC Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
We pulled into what felt like an old compound. You think, wow, this is a very old property.
I'm Danny Robbins, and Uncanny is back. We have three brand new summer special episodes, and things are about to get scary.
I could feel something moving up the side of the bed, and I can't quite believe what I'm seeing.
A trip to a tiny medieval town in central Spain turns into a holiday from hell.
I could make out its long, matted fur, and I am absolutely petrified. Absolutely petrified. This was just pure terror.
And we'll investigate more spine-chilling cases in an episode recorded live at the Hay Festival.
Uncanny Hay audience, who is feeling team believer? And who is team skeptic?
Listen now on BBC Sounds.
We focus on the part of the internet that most people don't know about. It's called the dark web.
Undercover in the furthest corners of the dark web, US special agents are on a mission to locate and rescue children from abuse.
Move in now.
Police!
From the BBC World Service, World of Secrets, the darkest web follows their shocking investigations. Listen on bbc.com or wherever you get your BBC podcasts.